this year, 2018, KBOO is celebrating our 50th anniversary. Throughout 2018, we'll be featuring many of the gems from KBOO's archives on our second stream, available exclusively through KBOO's website, kboo.fm/historystream. We'll feature such speakers as Margaret Mead, Bell Hooks, Dick Gregory, John Trudell, early computer hacker Captain Crunch, and audio coverage of the 1968 Democratic National Convention, as well as much, much more. You can find this stream on our website at kboo.fm/historystream.
Says Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, today I mostly want to talk about climate change, and I'm doing something different. I am live, rather clumsily, I think, on Periscope, which means that you should be able to get this broadcast on Facebook. And speaking of clumsiness, I set it up more than once on Press Watch, so you may find a dud if you try to find it. But if you keep trying, you can probably find this broadcast happening on Facebook, and it's also on Twitter, and that might be easier. Go onto Twitter and pull up at KBOO Press Watch. Just use the search bar to at KBOO Press Watch. And you may be able to find the live broadcast. And I'm just checking that now. And I believe that it's pretty close to actually functioning, and I'm just going to have to leave it at that. But first, headlines. From 2014 to 2016, Portland Cop Watch sent Attorney General Rosenblum information about 141 deadly force incidents in Oregon or involving Oregon law enforcement from January 2010 to December 2015. Dan Handelman wrote to Attorney General Rosenblum, "We began our analysis to ensure that your office was complying with SB 111 in 2007 regarding publishing the incidents in which a person died at the hands of Oregon law enforcement, which, so far as we know, has still never happened over 10 years later. Due to time constraints, we did not issue our analysis last year, so we have added the 51 new incidents for the past 2 years. That's 25 in 26 in 2017. For your use in following the law created by your predecessor, Hardy Myers. This makes 192 deadly force incidents. 28 more people died at the hands of law enforcement in these 2 years, bringing the total of 107 in 8 years. If the average of 13 people per year were dying from eating at a statewide restaurant franchise, Dan writes, we think you would be paying close attention. Since that many are dying due to police intervention, we ask that you at least publish their names as required. And part of what he wrote summarized the updated findings. Totals 192 incidents involving 194 civilians, 181 shootings with 97 ending in death, and 6 taser-related deaths, and 2 deaths in custody, 3 vehicles as deadly force, 2 ending in death. The fact remains, he writes, that the only indictment for an officer in any of these cases that we know of ended with the unfortunate suicide of Portland officer Dane Reister in 2015. His prosecution for a 2011 shooting was never carried out as an appeal from the Multnomah District Attorney was pending at the time of his death. We continue to encourage the Attorney General's office to look into the idea of special prosecutors for these incidents, since local DAs are unlikely to pursue charges in cases involving officers. They need to convict criminal suspects in their daily court proceedings. We also note, he writes, that even in this day and age, after Michael Brown was shot in Ferguson, Missouri, some agencies are not publishing the names of the officers involved. This includes the state trooper who shot LaVoy Fennicum in 2016 and the Gold Beach officers who shot at Brian Anthony Whidbey in October. Portland Cop Watch had to petition the Washington County Sheriff's Office to get the name of the officer who shot at a 17-year-old last April. Transparency in our state government is crucial, and we urge the Attorney General to ensure such names are transmitted to the public. And Dan Handelman wrote, "We hope to hear back from you soon." He was writing to the Attorney General, Portland Cop Watch. And you can find Portland Cop Watch online. This is Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I am attempting to broadcast live on Twitter and on Facebook. And so Facebook, go to Teresa Mitchell. And on Twitter, which might be easier, go to @KBOOPressWatch. All run together as one word, the symbol at, and then KBOOPRESSWATCH. Dateline Zurich from Radio Havana, Cuba. Thousands of protesters marched through Zurich on Tuesday and other major Swiss cities to demonstrate against a visit by U.S. President Donald Trump to the World Economic Forum's annual meeting this week. Donald Trump is due to speak on Friday at the WEF meeting in the Alpine town of Davos, an annual meeting of global business and political leaders where protests have been banned. Similar protests took place, with several hundred protesters each, in public squares in Geneva, Lausanne, and Fribourg. Democracy Now! Reported Switzerland has deployed at least 5,000 soldiers and police to Davos. It's also imposed a no-fly zone over the area. But returning to Radio Havana, Cuba, in related news, U.S. First Lady Melania Trump, who has made no public statement since reports of payoff from her husband's lawyer to a porn star, will not be accompanying him to the upcoming gathering in Davos. The change of plans was confirmed Tuesday to reporters by East Wing Communications Director Stephanie Grisham, who said a week earlier that she would be partaking at the event partaking at the event in a show of support for President Donald Trump. Trump's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, reportedly brokered a payment to an adult industry actress, Stormy Daniels, ahead of the latest round of the presidential election in October 2016 to make sure she will not leak the affair to the press. Ever since the news broke out last week, the wife of the 45th U.S. president has been silent, except for a pair of tweets that do not mention her husband, Donald Trump. And speaking for myself, of course, we've all seen the various incidents in which she slaps away his hand. And one rumor that is coming out is that he has taken up with Nikki Haley. Now, turning to further headlines, there's a study out of the Journal of the American Medical Association, and it's about wealth increasing longevity, or to put it a different way, poverty decreasing longevity. They write that their analysis yielded four results. First, higher income was associated with greater longevity throughout the income distribution. The gap in life expectancy, they write, between the richest 1% and the poorest 1% of individuals was 14.6 years for men and 10.1 years for women. So if I may speak for myself, the spread is something like you're more likely to die at 68 when you're poor, and you're more likely to die at 82 or more if you're rich in the United States. Second, inequality in life expectancy increased over time. Between 2001 and 2014, life expectancy increased by 2.34 years for men and 2.91 years for women in the top 5% of the income distribution, but only 0.32 years for men and 0.04 years for women in the bottom 5% of income. Third, life expectancy for low-income individuals varied substantially across local areas. And their conclusion in relevance to the United States, between 2001 and 2014, higher income was associated with greater longevity, and the differences in life expectancy across income groups increased over time. Now, this also affects how you live under climate change. And it stands to reason that if you have asthma from living in an area of town which pollution is not well controlled, and if you live in that area because you are impoverished, that is going to affect your longevity. We'll also like to turn to an article by Sebastian Melo. He writes that a ninth U.S. city has sued big oil firms over climate change, And he wrote this in Reuters. Under the Thomson Reuters Foundation, a California city, he writes, has filed a lawsuit against 29 oil companies seeking damages to pay for the cost of rising sea levels it blames on climate change. The ninth U.S. community to take the fossil fuel industry to court. The San Francisco suburb of Richmond filed a civil case in a California court on Monday against the energy giant Chevron, its biggest employer, and other oil companies for planet-warming carbon dioxide emissions dating back to 1965. Defendants have known for nearly 50 years, the complaint said, that greenhouse gas pollution from their fossil fuel products has a significant impact on the Earth's climate and sea levels. Defendants concealed the dangers, sought to undermine public support for greenhouse gas regulation, and engaged in massive campaigns to promote the ever-increasing use of their products at ever greater volumes. End quote. New York City announced earlier this month that it filed a multi-billion dollar lawsuit against five top oil companies citing their contributions to global warming, following similar lawsuits filed last year by California cities. A Chevron spokesman questioned the benefits that could come from Richmond's lawsuit filed on Monday. He said, reducing greenhouse gas emissions is a global issue that requires global engagement. End quote. And that was according to Chevron spokesman Braden Riddall in emailed comments. And of course, speaking for myself, he would say something like that now, wouldn't he? It's not us. It's all of us. Golly. But returning to the text, Chevron employs nearly 3,500 people at its Richmond refinery. According to municipal data, Richmond is uniquely vulnerable because it is surrounded by water on three sides with 32 miles of shoreline in one of the poorest communities in the Bay Area, the mayor's office said in a statement. And that goes back to what I was saying about your income having to do with how much you're going to be affected by climate change. Returning to the text, taxpayers of this low-income city should not have to pay for damages that these companies are causing. That's a quote from Alex Knox, Richmond mayor's chief of staff. He said that in an email. U.S. President Donald Trump's move to pull out of the global Paris Climate Change Accord and roll back environmental regulations means campaigners are increasingly resorting to litigation. Legal scrutiny of oil companies is growing in the United States. And that is according to Michael Gerard, an environmental expert at Columbia Law School. He says each new lawsuit is incrementally more pressure on the oil companies. So I'm interested to see what you have to say about the tactic of suing oil companies. Do you think that it's time to pile on? And I want to double down on that with some information on just how bad things are getting. Perhaps you saw the article that was published in NPR.org about the carbon that is now being rapidly released from permafrost across the globe, and particularly in the northern hemisphere. This is more carbon, more carbon than has ever been released or is likely to be released by fossil fuels. But of course, it is the fossil fuel burning that has caused this carbon to be released. This is the new thing. Permafrost is melting and it is releasing its carbon, but more than that, long dormant, thousands of years dormant organisms in the permafrost are now waking up, and they are producing methane, and methane is a very efficient greenhouse gas, efficient in the bad way. And so this brings me to the question of the methane gun and the methane burst that has been dreaded, and something that I first referred to on this program back in 94, when the information came out, and it seemed distant and apocalyptic and bizarre at the time. But now, with all the information coming out about various methane sources, methane releases, and the accumulation of methane, it's starting to look like we're going to be talking about methane for a long time. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And for those of you commenting on Periscope, I'll have to check that after the fact, unless I can get it on my screen here. But I am broadcasting on Periscope, which is to say that you can find the live broadcast on Twitter.com. Pull up Twitter. Then go to the search bar and put in at KBOO Press Watch. At KBOO Press Watch. And that will get you the live broadcast. If it's still working, I think I'll just check the screen here for a moment. Yeah, seems to still be cooking. We shall see. And you can also, if the if the electron fairies are working correctly, you should be able to see this on Facebook as well. And my Facebook name is the same as my daily name, Teresa Mitchell. And there's more than one. I spell my name with an H, Teresa Mitchell, and you may be able to pull it up in that way. So going back to the topics and the text, once again, the number for you to call in with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. The Los Angeles Times has pointed out that climate change is going to affect California's beaches. They write, between a third and two-thirds of Southern California beaches will succumb to sea level rise by the end of this century unless global fossil fuel emissions are dramatically reined in. According to a 2017 U.S. Geological Survey report, they'll end up completely eroded up to existing coastal infrastructure or sea cliffs. Zuma, Redondo, and Del Mar, among many others, could all but disappear. And this is a phrase that I often see, and it does reflect the scientific inquiry, and it reflects the caution of scientific inquiry, which I very much support, of course, that the conservative estimates, the careful estimates, say that we're talking about sea level rise by the end of this century. But I would like to point out that we are facing immediate effects from global warming, and I think whether it's strictly speaking accurate or not, last year will be reviewed, will be thought of as year zero for the effects of global warming. The reason being that there were so many weather-related and global warming-related natural disasters. There are 29 events, according to weatherunderground.com, which they the URL is wonderground.com. They write, Earth had its costliest year on record for weather-related natural disasters, with 29 events reaching the billion-dollar mark. That's according to an insurance broker. And they write, this is the sixth largest number of such disasters since he began record-keeping in 1990. The annual average of billion-dollar weather disasters is 22 since 1990. Highest number was 41 in 2013 and 2010. The U.S. had the most billion-dollar weather disasters of any country, with 16 included on the insurance adjusters list. China came in second with 4. NOAA also tallied 16 U.S. billion-dollar weather disasters, which tied 2011 for the most on record in a single year. The combined economic losses insured and uninsured from all 330 weather and earthquake disasters cataloged by Ann Benfield, and I want to include the earthquake disasters because, after all, the crust is drying and glaciers are being reduced in weight, and that is increasing earthquakes, is 93% above the 17-year inflation-adjusted average of $183 billion. The great bulk of the 2017 total came from weather-related disasters, which produced $344 billion in damage, higher than the previous record for weather-related disasters of $294 billion in 2005. He writes, significantly, three of the five most expensive weather disasters in world history occurred in 2017. Three of the five most expensive weather disasters in world history occurred last year. Pulling stats from the insurance adjuster Aon Benfield and NOAA, the list of top five most expensive weather disasters in world history now looks like this. Number one, Hurricane Katrina in 2005 at $161 billion. Number two, Hurricane Harvey in Houston last year, $100 billion. Number three, Hurricane Sandy in 2012, New York, $70 billion. Number four, Hurricane Maria, $65 billion. Number five, Hurricane Irma, $55 billion. And stopping there for a moment and just commenting on the general situation, of course, it is still true that huge swaths of Puerto Rico have not had their power restored. And it is manifestly clear as well that this is a part of it's part of an effort by the big banks, big capitalists, real estate investors, etc., to engage in disaster capitalism, as in Katrina. The areas that have not had their power restored have seen a plummeting in real estate value, and this is intentional. This is intentional. It also results in a great deal of human suffering. The suffering is largely by persons who are not designated as white persons, and this is intentional. So we're talking about a repeat of the racist disaster capitalism of Katrina now happening in Puerto Rico, and it is grotesque to the extent that the federal government, the FEMA, actually had to bring an armed crew with them to recover essential supplies from where they were being stockpiled and kept away from repairmen. An incredible situation, a deeply, viciously, racistly corrupt situation in Puerto Rico. Number to call with your comments and questions on climate change and on topics that I brought up here is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. NOAA's damage totals for Hurricanes Harvey, Maria, and Maria, Harvey, Maria, and Irma were $125, $90, and $50 billion, respectively. Each of these NOAA values includes an uncertainty range that encompasses the Aon Benfield numbers that I just mentioned. Natural disasters, including earthquakes, killed approximately 10,000 people in 2017, substantially lower than the 2001-2016 average of 71,000 fatalities per year. The deadliest weather disaster of 2017 was a flood-driven landslide in Sierra Leone that killed more than 1,000 people, though total indirect deaths in Puerto Rico alone from Hurricane Maria have been estimated at over 1,000. And again, that's the corporate-owned press. If that's shocking to you, that's the corporate-owned press actually using their non-statistics, their non-inquiry to hide what is actually going on. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Pick up this live broadcast at Facebook and pull up Teresa Mitchell. Search Teresa Mitchell and you should be able to find the live broadcast out of our studio too. And if you're on Twitter, then bring up Twitter and search at KBOO Press Watch, at KBOO Press Watch. And now I've been brought some water by such a thoughtful person here at KBOO. Thank you very much. It does the job. And I've been talking about the severity of global warming, and I've been trying to make the case that it is being used, frankly, by the Trump administration, which at some level is very aware of global warming, of course the Pentagon is, to increase their hegemony, to increase the grotesque and evil maldistribution of wealth and power in this country, and to push us further and further into a fascist dictatorship, into a kleptocracy and oligarchy, which we already experience. And so the number to call with your comments and questions is 503-231-8187. I'll go to the first caller. And James is on the air.
Oh, good morning. Thank you so much for your show. It's probably my favorite, yes.
Good morning.
Can you hear me? James, thank you for your show.
Yes, I hear you.
Oh, okay. Just was going to relate one story on the Chevron. I was working at a patent firm in Bay Area, and we brought the chemical engineer from Chevron on board, and I was his patent assistant. I asked him about buying a little house in Point Richmond, and he looked at me and he brought me aside. He says, "Sir, your life expectancy will go down 20 or 30 years if you move over there," which is where all the Chevron refineries are. And he says, "You better go over to Marin there," which is where the headquarters for Chevron is, over in Marin on the other side. Of course, there's no refineries there, and all the, you know, well-to-do people live in Marin. And then they call it a cancer alley all the way from Point Richmond all the way out to the Antioch, Pittsburgh, where all the not-so-white people live.
So you were inside the line of information there and got the real deal, the real information. And of course, I'm sure that I could predict confidently that the persons in the zone in which the life expectancy was so degraded were not persons of color.
That's very correct.
We're persons of color, I'm sorry to say. We're not white people.
That's very correct, yes.
That's how the economics work. Well, that's interesting information. I heard
something. And Chevron is headquartered in Marin now, and all the their refineries, of course, are not in Marin.
In Marin County, California?
Yes, Chevron, I believe that's headquarters. They moved it from Richmond because the heat was coming up too much from the community there. But, of course, they didn't move their refineries. They just moved the headquarters, like on that Benton Harbor story I was hearing this morning with Whirlpool.
And what is that story?
Regarding the company being located in Benton Harbor for only the Anglo people work at the headquarters, and they don't employ any of the African Americans, which the community's mostly it. Only for as janitors, Marin's all Anglo, and that's where the headquarters is. But the people who work in the refineries out in Cancer Alley are not Anglo. They're all, you know, not.
A case of environmental racism. Well, thank you very much for that information.
Okay, thank you. Keep up your good work.
Thanks. Bye. Number to call, 503-231-8187, and you can get online to speak to me and to talk about the global warming disaster. In the article I was just reading, flooding at the sites that I was describing at the beaches in California could spread a toxic brew into groundwater and water bodies such as San Francisco Bay, where there are many Superfund sites. They write, still not alarmed and consider that the pace of sea level rise is accelerating. California has so far escaped the fate of Florida, where many communities are already experiencing chronic flooding, but our turn is coming. From 1880 to the present, the ocean has risen 8 inches, thanks to intensifying global warming. From now until 2100, they write, the increase will be a matter of feet, not inches. And I want to comment that this certainly applies to Oregon and Oregon beaches as well. We have something to lose here, all of us. Our way of life, our health, and as I was saying, I do believe that last year will be marked as the beginning of the worst of global warming, and there's a couple of reasons I say that. If I go back a couple of years, I think of Hurricane Patricia, which is very little known because it did so little damage to infrastructure. It actually crashed into the jungle, but it was a bizarre hurricane at the time. It had the highest winds ever recorded. When the jet went over it, I believe it was an NOAA jet, and when it struck land, it took a rather odd shape. The eye wall was quite vicious, and it ripped up that jungle section. Pardon me, in Mexico, but it was much narrower. It was almost tornado-like, the way that the shape of the hurricane had obviously changed, and that got my attention. And then another thing that got my attention was Hurricane Maria over Houston, actually over Texas. It wandered onto land and wandered off, and the way it was able to do that was it kept its eye wall intact. It went over. I remember looking at the satellite images so that I could see through the eye wall to the ground in Nacogdoches as the hurricane maintained its shape. And it's evident now that this bizarre instance, hurricanes simply do not do that. When they strike land, their eye wall breaks up. This was not true last year over Texas. And the fact is there is more energy available to the hurricane now than there has been in human history, because there's more moisture in the air. It's a thing that feeds on itself. And so we saw that bizarre phenomenon in which the hurricane remains a hurricane with an eye, with hurricane speed winds, as it sits over land for day after day. I think that was a great big hint that the world has changed, and that these storms will increase and become more vicious. And I have more information on that as well. But first I'll go to a caller, 503-231-8187. And Johnny's on the air.
Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
Thank you so much. As usual, you know, you got a lot of fans out there. You're keeping it real. Thanks a lot. From James, your first caller, he was bringing up the job situation down at Chevron, and how only, or not Chevron, well, both Chevron and the Whirlpool, and you know how Richmond is close to the black community out there, and how they've already had emergencies at that particular plant that actually had a negative effect from their emissions and from explosions at that plant, to where it got people sick in that Richmond community, which is mostly African American. It's about the job situation. You know, a lot of people say, you know, racism is about hate, and I have to constantly like correct them and say, no, it's about access to resources and good paying jobs. And I don't know why everyone focuses on hate when in the beginning the racism was about access to wealth and access to good paying jobs. It always has been.
That's something,
and it will continue to be.
That's something Cornel West was emphasizing just the other day. He was saying that that racism is inextricable from this extraction of wealth from workers and from a reserve army of workers, extraction of wealth from the desperation of a population, which can be profitably increased during a disaster, which can be profitably increased by shoving people into areas that they would prefer to get out of because they're too polluted by chemical plants. It's a piece and needs to be viewed as a piece.
Well, some insightful people brought a direct connection between employment and black men being thrown into the criminal justice system at exorbitant level. But I originally wanted to call you about the Catalonia situation and how I was listening to Assange talking to Amy, and how Amy kept talking about a specific subject. And he kind of like shrugged it off and said, look, the real news is what's going on in Spain, Catalonia, Spain, and how the Spanish citizens there are using like Mahatma Gandhi-like tactics and nonviolence to get it beat up so that they can get their votes. I'm noticing no one's talking about it. And the only reason why I talked about it, the only reason why I'm bringing it up, is because Julian Assange appeared to be visibly upset with the subject matter that Amy was bringing on him. He goes, well, how can you guys continue to ignore Catalonia?
Interesting. All right. Well, thanks for bringing that up. Sovereignty. Kind of the basis of things. If you don't have sovereignty, if you have to deal with occupying force, occupying government, then you have to correct that. Been talking about the ongoing climate disaster and been trying to make the point that it has now started in earnest, and that you and I will see the effects increasingly. These phrases that we read in the news, they are unintentionally encouraging because they come from scientists who are being cautious. And again, I applaud scientists for being cautious and for being scientists and for saying only what they can prove with a certainty. And what I'm referring to is the idea that by the end of the century, fill in the blank, by the end of the century, you know, this much carbon, by the end of the century, storms will be like this, by the end of the century, there'll be this much sea level rise. This has already started. Islands that are subject to sea rise, low-lying islands, are already being inundated. The storms, the global warming storms that we dreaded, are already happening. I was just describing Hurricane Maria and why it was weird, different, strange, and probably the new normal. This is happening now, and I think that you need to know, because I think that I can predict that the powers that be, the powers that we now allow to have hegemony over us, namely the corporations, the Pentagon, and the U.S. government, are going to take a series of attitudes and actions, and it's fairly predictable because of who they are and what they've done in the past. And what I mean is, first, we will see what we do see now, which is the Trump administration, which is, of course, in the pocket of the big manufacturers and the oil industry, would very much like you to ignore the problem, would very much like for you to think that you will not personally see any consequences from it. They want you to scoff at it and say that it's a conspiracy. That's the denial. That's the first phase, and that can go on for a bit. Even though we have had phenomena like I just described with that hurricane tearing up Texas and keeping its eye wall while it was over dry land, It's not an idea. It's not a fact that has been much talked about. Although I would assert that it was absolutely devastating because of its implications. That was not a normal hurricane. And we did have all the other hurricanes. And of course, as I said, the $29 billion storm year, if you add up all the storms, this means a significant portion of the population is now engaged in doing infrastructure repair. This means temporarily jobs for some people. There's always a silver lining, right? But I said that there are three phases to the way the oligarchy, the kleptocracy, the people who rule us, the way that they will react to this. Right now, they're going for denial. That isn't going to last much longer. How much longer exactly, I don't know. But these storms, these events, these fires will become more grievous. And at some point, there will be a change to acknowledging that it is happening, perhaps trying to blame other factors. And then finally, the Pentagon particularly, and the government and the corporations will say, well, we'll save you. And the way that they would like to save us, that the way that they are already contemplating saving us, and you can put that word save in the scare quotes, is they will come up with the most dangerous, deleterious, terrifying global engineering schemes. They will be tempted to create a scheme in which they blast sulfates into the atmosphere to block out the sun, increasing acid rain and setting up a situation that could not be reversed. In other words, setting up a global engineering paradigm that they could endlessly profit from, because as soon as it were taken down, all of the global warming would suddenly surge and the disasters would attack tenfold. It's something that once started cannot be stopped. So we are going to be facing this, I do believe. And the number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. And Sam's on the air.
Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
So, relevant to disaster capitalism.
Okay.
Certain factions are beefing up the seaports in Iceland because they expect the Northwest Passage to remain open year-round, and they want to be there first and foremost to get that shipping. Just saying.
Yeah, those ports are remaining open longer, and it is profitable for those who have to wait for the ice to break up to get their supplies on the coast there.
That's all I had, Teresa.
Okay, yeah, well, that's definitely happening. Thanks for calling in about that. There's other phenomena which are not... I think that the state of the northern polar ice cap is very precarious right now. It's not just that it is so greatly reduced in area, but it is greatly reduced in volume. So we've got thin ice where there used to be thick ice. We've got new ice where there used to be old ice. And that is producing effects even now, by messing up the global jet stream, the northern polar jet stream. To bring together some of these stats, I want to read from an article published by the University of Arizona, and it's by Marie N. Jensen, University of Arizona College of Science, and Jim Erickson, University of Michigan. They just published this, and it's under the category of resources for media, so I'm going to lay this on you. By the way, it's 9:40. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Also on Twitter right now, live at KBOO Press Watch, and on Facebook at Teresa Mitchell. Global surface temperatures, they write, surged by a record amount from 2014 to 2016, boosting the total amount of warming since the start of the last century by more than 25% in just 3 years. They say, our paper is the first one to actually quantify this jump and identify the fundamental reason for this jump. The Earth's average surface temperature climbed about 1.6 degrees from 1900 to 2013. By analyzing global temperature records, the researchers found that by the end of 2016, the global surface temperature had climbed an additional 0.43 degrees Fahrenheit, Co-author Jonathan Overpeck said, as a climate scientist, it was just remarkable to think that the atmosphere of the planet could warm that much that fast, end quote. And speaking for myself now, this is coming in the context of information that the ocean waters are also heating at a tremendous rate. All of this represents energy. All of this represents storms. And so we are seeing that in terms of the $29 billion worth of storm damage that are referred to over the year 2017. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And I guess the point that I'm trying to get to is that we need to mobilize, that the crisis is upon us now. We need to get hold of these conversations. We need to get hold of these hegemonists, these people who rule us, and say, we cannot afford to be ruled by you any longer. You have destroyed the planet. This paradigm must come down. We must no longer be ruled by oil companies who own the government so well that they actually are still getting massive multi-billion dollar subsidies for destroying the planet, as opposed to what should happen right now is that the oil companies should simply be nationalized and seized by the people, and their resources converted to stopping and to whatever ability their resources should be converted to reversing this planet-killing phenomenon. And maybe I should have another phrase for that. It's not going to kill the planet. It's just going to kill us. A few million years from now, the planet will be teeming with life. If things go this way, it'll be just fine. And a couple million years is nothing compared to the billions of years this planet has been around. So I don't want to get too anthropocentric in terms of what the planet is going to suffer, but we are going to suffer. And I kind of like human beings, so I think that we should do something about it. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And Moose is on the air.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. Is this Moose the Moose I know from 20 years ago?
It might be. Moose Griffith, about 6'4", blonde, blue-eyed.
Yeah. Hi, Moose.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going pretty good.
Dude, nice to talk to you. I wanted to say thank you so much for articulating a view that I really don't hear articulated often enough that I first learned from George Carlin about the planet being fine. And that really is, like, I think best articulated by Daniel Quinn in his novels, especially Ishmael. And so just thank you for mentioning that anthropocentrism. And I apologize for my shameless plugs of Daniel Quinn and Noam Chomsky. I just feel like they explain these power systems really well that you're told. If it's a paranoid conspiracy theory, then I'd be done with it. But if you say that they're real, then I'll still be left in mystery.
Well, I guess I don't have a very direct answer. I'll have a slightly indirect answer. What I want to say is that contrails that we see all the time are deleterious to planetary heat management. And I think that I have seen some obvious experimentation last year, or was it a couple of years ago? Actually took some pictures and put it on Facebook of contrail spewing aircraft actually doing Immelmann turns over Portland. And this is a bizarre thing because they weren't that far from the airport. I mean, they were out of the airport's flyway, clearly, but they weren't that far away, and they were doing these violent, amazing maneuvers in which you take your jet aircraft, and Immelmann is basically a flip over of the aircraft. You start going the opposite direction by describing a curve upwards and then flipping your aircraft back over so that you can continue flying. And this is not something that you do with a commercial aircraft. It's something that is done with fighter pilots do that. But this was done by several aircraft, and it was pretty clearly in a way to block solar radiation. So I could see that some experimentation was going on, and I suspect this isn't the only place that's doing that. If you look online, you can find companies that specialize in that, specialize in affecting the climate. They do cloud seeding, and I think that what I observed on that day was simply radiation I don't want to say forcing radiation reflection, because that those crystals will effectively reflect quite a bit of solar radiation. And if you follow the temperature on the day that that happened, if you follow local temperatures, you can see the temperatures dip about 2 degrees when the cloud created by all that tomfoolery got in the way of the sun. So that happens. That said, I deeply suspect that much of what we call chemtrails, and that word itself, chemtrails, is actually a red herring in the sense that it is an exaggerated idea that is put out by people who put out a great deal of pseudoscience. They'll come up, for example, with a chemical formula that may or may not have to do with actual chemistry, and they'll say that this is what is being spewed in the air, but then they won't come up with direct evidence. So although it is possible to block the sun and to have various effects by spewing chemicals, I don't think it happens very often, and I do think that contrails themselves are quite effective in affecting the climate. For example, I've said for years that it would make sense, given the circumstances, to ban all contrail-producing flights over the northern polar ice at night, because we know from the shutdown of air traffic during 9/11 that when those contrails are not there at night, radiation from the Earth's surface into space is much more efficient. In other words, temperatures drop when they're not there. So to save the polar ice, you would think that contrail producing flights over the poles would be banned at night. It's a complicated subject.
Wow, that, I mean, I guess it turns out to be a mixed bag like everything else. I mean, my ex-girlfriend just turned me on to this documentary called The Red Pill, and she said it made her abandon feminism, and I watched it and I'm like, oh, I think my feminism is in trouble too. And I'm like, why does everything have to turn out to be so much more complicated? Why can't there just be a side who's right? Why does everyone have to be so wrong?
I like to say embrace complexity. And by the way, I do embrace feminism. it's just for the human rights of women. And how can you be against that? Hey, thanks very much for your call. The number to call, 503.
Hey, thank you so much.
The number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. And Warren is on the air.
Hello. Hello. Okay. Yeah, thanks, Teresa. I love your show. I've really learned a lot from you. And so I wanted to talk about some of the things I've learned about NPR and what I've heard you say. And I heard another advertisement just last week on NPR, which kind of reminded me of what you were talking about, Walmart, and this was related to global warming. It was on the TED Talk, and it was an advertisement, I believe, by the gas industry, and they were talking about this sort of geoengineering kind of thing where they were going to use a massive amounts of gas to trap carbon and then lock it up in lime and then put it down into the earth. And they didn't mention one thing. The person doing the interviewing didn't mention anything all about fracking, about poisoning of groundwater or anything. So I just wanted to pass that on. And I've got to get off because I'm at work right now. So thanks. I'll listen to what you have to say off the air.
Well, thanks for bringing that up. Well, I think those big solutions at this point, pardon me, at this point, those solutions are not online because they would require massive infrastructure. And I very much support the inquiry into methods of sequestering carbon, but right now we don't have an economically feasible way of doing it. And also it dovetails with what I was saying about the hegemonists, the big operators, the oligarchs that rule us now, would like to turn things around at some point and say, we'll save you. And it could be by mounting a dangerous and expensive sun-blocking operation, for example, exploding devices in the atmosphere, hopefully not nuclear devices, but I suppose that would do it, to put sulfates up to block the sun, as I was mentioning, as contrails do. And the sequestration of carbon could also fall under that category if it were, for example, Exxon, Mobil, Chevron, Phillips, Conoco that would want to do that and to get the contracts for it and to tax us to put up these massive installations that would be necessary. I think it is definitely time to seize the oligarchs, because their rule is just so obviously failed. It has so obviously failed. We have so many people on the streets. We have approximately half the working class of the United States so desperate that they're one paycheck away from losing their housing. We have the increasing asthma under a paradigm in which you cannot get medical care in this country without first providing a profit to an insurer. It's just monstrously corrupt. We're all used to it, but we need to see it for what it is. Monstrously corrupt. The rule of a very, very few. The very few billionaires who set the tone and rule, sometimes very directly rule us according to their whims. We cannot afford to abandon participatory, democratic, open systems anymore. We can't afford to have a Democratic party that serves the corporations no matter what and marginalizes all new movements. We have to take the power into our hands. And the point that I'm making is that we're running out of time because of climate change. We can change. As Naomi Klein has pointed out, we can seize this moment ourselves. The capitalists like to seize the moment, but we also should seize the moment of change, of climate change, to move forward with our own movements. And people have done that. People did that in New Orleans after Katrina and saved their communities to the extent that they were able by organizing. This is also true in Sandy. People provided relief when none was to be provided by the government and the corporations. They simply did it themselves. And it's a wonderful story. If you're not already familiar with it, it's worth looking up. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Also want to talk about storms. Chris Mooney writes an article in Washington Post saying the governors of several coastal states reacted with alarm after Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke granted Florida Governor Rick Scott a waiver on January 9th. Along the rocky coast of Ireland's Aran Islands, they write, scientists have found a new illustration of immense power of ocean waves and a possible hint of what we should fear if climate change makes coastal storms more intense. A 620-ton boulder, equivalent in mass to about 90 large African elephants, moved several meters on the ground of Inishmore in the winter of 2013-14 after being slammed by powerful coastal storm waves, according to the research led by Ronald Cox. A geoscientist at Williams College. It was just more than 1,000 boulders that moved along Ireland's coast during the storms, many of them quite large, according to Cox. The researchers detected 6 boulders weighing more than 100 tons and 18 weighing more than 50 tons that had been displaced by waves. And this got my attention because I had paid attention earlier to James Hansen talking about gigantic boulders. I believe this was in the famous film. That have been thrown up on island cliffs, and it is clear now that these were not thrown up by a tsunami and that the ocean is capable of gigantic storms. I was talking earlier about the shape and nature of Hurricanes Patricia and Hurricane Maria, that they are different, more powerful, and capable, in the case of Maria, of maintaining hurricane force, strength, and shape on land, over land. So this is something I believe that we are going to face more and more, hurricanes that can move over land. And I invite you to think about that for a moment. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. They write, we had boulders that were north of 100 tons, sitting tens of meters above sea level, and tens of meters inland of the high tide mark that got moved several meters or several tens of meters. There were boulders that were created from bedrock that were ripped up and disaggregated, and the pieces flung into the boulder ridge at 90 meters inland and 15 meters above sea level. If those meters throw you as an American, just multiply them by 3, you can get an approximation. The discovery, they write, could reset our assumptions about how to explain the mysterious boulders found littered around along shorelines around the world, which scientists have traditionally linked to powerful tsunami waves. Most prominent among those are a pair of boulders on Bahamian island of Eleuthera. I believe that was the one in the film with James Hansen. They write, the 925 and 383-ton rocks sit on a coastal ridge well above sea level. They've been cited as evidence of extreme superstorms occurring more than 100,000 years ago. The last time the planet was as warm is where we're currently headed, and thus interpreted as a lesson about the dangers of climate change, but scientific counterarguments suggest the rocks could instead have been moved by some type of nearby tsunami. And then further into the piece, you can see that they looked into that, that they did what tests they could to find out when the tsunamis were that could have moved those rocks, and found, lo and behold, that it was not the tsunamis that did it. That's the long story short. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. And I'm broadcasting live on Twitter at KBU Press Watch. And David's on the air.
Hi, Teresa. Thank you for taking my call. I just picked up the program a few minutes ago, so I don't know how much you've talked about, but I really want to talk about geoengineering. And
we were talking about that, yes.
Yeah, I picked it up, so I thought I'd call because, you know, this is an issue for me. I've been researching for a number of years. When I look up in the sky, I see these white lines being sprayed over our heads in Portland day after day after day, year after year, in these strange grid-like patterns. And I came across by the name of Dane Wigington, who is a researcher for a website called geoengineeringwatch.org. And I really encourage everybody who's interested in this topic to check out this website. It's a repository of well-vetted information and research that people can learn all about the practice of geoengineering, which after studying this for a number of years, to me, is completely happening. It's happening at an aggressive rate, and it's right over our heads, and it's probably happening right now above the clouds that we see. The research that I've picked up is demonstrating that much of the drought in California, and really the drier weather and the droughts that we're seeing in Oregon, are largely caused by these stratospheric aerosol injections. So this is a term could also be used as persistent contrails. These are actual scientific terms. Instead of using the word chemtrail, chemtrail is not an actual word. If you Google the word chemtrail, you're going to come up with conspiracy. But if you Google stratospheric aerosol injection, climate engineering, geoengineering, stratospheric aerosol management, if you search for real scientific terms, you will get real information on what's going on. This website, geoengineeringwatch.org, has all kinds of information which shows geoengineering patents. It lists congressional documents that have been uncovered through Freedom of Information Act that shows that Congress has been authorizing research and practices of geoengineering for over 70 years.
We are out of time, and so I'll have to leave it at that, and I appreciate you bringing up the website, which I'll have to say, by way of vetting, I have not looked at yet. I'll have a look at it. Of course, I was earlier saying that this is a topic in which the powers that be like to throw in red herrings in order to embarrass people who are trying to find out the real truth. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, going out to you via KBOO.fm, via the big transmitter on the hill at 90.7 FM. And when we go out on the web, we're going out to all the ships at sea.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 10 o'clock. We have Air Cascadia coming up next, followed by Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein at 11 on Between the Covers, anti-capitalist, feminist, and anti-racist writing from poet Eunsung Kim and her book Gospel of Regicide. And at 11:30, a special presentation of Stage and Studio, an Oregon Treasures documentary on legendary Portland writer Ursula K. Le Guin, who passed away